It's almost like they become a conduit or an attenuator for some sort of cultural moment, right? Which is sort of a conflux of forces coming together artistically and culturally. And they end up being the one to express it. But they are often humble enough to say, I don't know where it came from exactly. And like you said, it also happens in the sciences too, which is ironic because in conventional society, the way we're taught in school is that these things are methodical. You follow the scientific method, you test a hypothesis. All that's part of it. But the most amazing, remarkable breakthroughs have been those moments of intuition, right? Which is connected, the same part of the brain as the psychic aspect, right? Like it's all part of this. And when you think about, again, in modern society, again, for all the amazing things that the modern world has given us, we've lost that need to intuitively know where our next meal is coming from, where is the lion behind the tree. And because of that, we also, I think, have left dormant this capacity that's in all of us.
Have you ever wondered if your company is maximizing the return of your data investment? Are you collecting the right data required to make informed decisions? Is there more that can be learned from our data? Coeus Institute can answer these questions and help you discover the hidden value within your data sets by utilizing a well-rounded approach to data analysis. Stop leaving value behind and start increasing the return on your data investment. The next generation of data analysis has begun. We are pioneers in pattern discovery. We are Coeus Institute.
I think because I just have this curiosity that's so central to who I am, that if I find anything that I can't find closure on, I want to investigate and understand more. And I think also I have this sort of innate sense that there is an enchantment to the world, to reality, that it's not supposed to be just you go to your work 9 to 5, come home, buy a house, retire, die. That just seems much too simple and unremarkable and pointless. So for me, whenever I see things that point to something mysterious about something deeper than what we often are talked about in conventional society, that tends to make me want to look further.
And when did that start? I mean, have you always been a naturally curious person, or was there a definitive moment, a series of catalysts that kind of spurred you on to creating a YouTube channel and obviously dedicating a lot of time to it? So it's not just a casual interest. It's something you dedicate significant amounts of your time to. So what was the initial trigger, if there was one?
It's a good point, because definitely I do this more than anything else, and right, do it like consistently, like an obsession, basically. Well, I think when I was younger, growing up in conventional society, I kind of was a physicalist in many ways. I mean, I went through sort of a religious phase, which kind of went from Christianity merging more into like non-dual kind of Buddhist kind of perspectives and Advaita Vedanta. But nevertheless, in my daily life, thinking about science, I tend to be a physicalist. But then I ended up marrying someone who is what I would call like a conduit, who just seems to have anomalous experiences all the time. And I couldn't help but be drawn into them. And at first I would try to rationalize it, explain it away, and then eventually began to have some of my own experiences where I just had nowhere to put it, zero places to put it. And when I tried to raise the concerns with other people, they basically just had no answers and wanted to change the subject, basically. The main one being in 2005, as I've said in other podcasts, I was traveling across the country with my young family at the time. And in the early morning hours, I awoke to find kind of a humanoid entity at the end of our bed. And again, conventionally, you think it's got to be either my wife at the time or our really young daughter. But really, this being was too tall to be my daughter. But again, your brain just goes to some sort of conventional explanation. But then I pretty quickly realized it wasn't her, couldn't be her, and she was still sleeping in the bed next to us. So I got up and moved towards this entity. Looked mostly human, just something a bit weird about it. But then it backed up. It seemed surprised that I could see her slash it. Seemed surprised. Almost as surprised that I was seeing it. And then it backed up, went right through the wall. And then I did something really, really strange. Again, it was only later when I investigated the UFO phenomenon that I realized it's not that uncommon, actually, for my behavior patterns to not match my usual behavior. I turned around and went right back to bed as if nothing had happened. My wife at the time, thankfully, saw the whole thing too, which makes a huge difference, right? It was just me. I probably would have explained it away, said it was a dream or something, right? Bad pizza and indigestion. But because she saw it too, she sort of shook me out of my stupor. And we both sort of said, what are we going to do about this? And even though we didn't stick around for the continental breakfast, we just woke up our daughter. My wife, by the way, was pregnant, like 7 months pregnant or something with our son at the time. So we hot-tailed out of there. And for me, that experience was the first one where I said, I have no place to put that. And there's no category in conventional thinking that I can slot that into. So for me, that started the process. But even then, this is what's so interesting about these kind of experiences for people, is that it took years before I really even came across other notions because of the UFO phenomenon, where I said, wait a second, that kind of matches up. And then you feel authorized to actually investigate further. Before then, people just quickly changed the subject. So I kind of had it locked away in one part of my brain for a long period of time.
Yeah, it's interesting that you, I mean, it's good that your wife saw it as well. That's like a sense of validation for yourself, because a lot of people would look at an experience like that, especially because you were asleep, and say, oh, it was probably some form of sleep paralysis. But having that shared experience between the two of you kind of validates it further. And to be honest, even with the sleep paralysis episodes that people have, and I've experienced myself some really weird sleep paralysis moments, I don't necessarily discount that as just apparitions and hallucinations of the brain anyway. I think that there's certainly an argument to be made that when you're coming out of REM sleep, you're kind of observing within a different perceptual bandwidth that you would normally be perceiving in your default waking state, because you've just
exactly your filters are not online yet, right?
Your filters are
more reality. Yeah,
your filters are not online is a good way of looking at it. It hasn't loaded up all of those buffering obstacles in front of the observation, so that you start seeing these things. And I think there's an element of truth to that. Maybe we can get into this later, because I don't want to jump too much off topic, although it kind of ties in. But a friend of mine had a very strange experience. To be fair, this did involve psychedelic mushrooms, but even then, I will not discount that completely, because these are all shared space phenomenological kind of things. Phenomenological, that is not an easy one to say quickly.
That's right, a lot of syllables.
That's a hard one to say quickly. But he had an experience, I'll quickly say it because it is interesting and it ties into this sleep experience, and then we'll kind of rewind back, so I want to ask you a couple of things. But he took a pretty significant dose of psilocybin mushrooms in his room alone. And long story short, he was lying on his bed and he had his eyes open. And when he closed his eyes, his room came into view. Hang on a second. My camera's just decided it wants to zoom all the way out.
Speaking of anomalies, as you say, as you're recounting your friend's experience, your camera is zooming.
What is going on? Oh my God, hang on a second. It should be locked in place, but it's decided to go walk about. That's kind of hitchhiker effecty, isn't it? That's kind of weird.
It is. Yeah.
That's kind of weird. Let's try and lock that in. This is the first time I'm actually using my my brand spanking new gimbal camera. Right, stop auto-tracking my face. Because it has this thing where it has an AI inside it, so you can get it to face track you and follow you around.
Right.
For some reason, they decided to just automatically activate that. Let's just get this lined up. There we go. Right, cool. rewinding back. So he had this incredibly strong dose of psilocybin mushrooms. He was lying on his bed, and his room faded into view. Like the part of his room he would be able to see if he opened his eyes, for the love of God. I might just have to switch webcams. Sorry, bro. I don't know why it's doing
this.
Why is it doing this? Every time I talk about this experience as well, that's what's freaking me out a little bit.
I'm wondering if it's when you put your hand up.
Dude, that's what it is. That's one of the gestures for the AI, is when you put your hand up. Thank you, so Darren. Honestly, look at me.
I noticed the consistency there. Yeah.
That's what it is. All right, I must have a bit of Italian blood in me, because my gestures, I get very handsy with my gestures. I have to try and keep them down by my sides. Okay. All right. Third time's a charm. No hands this time. He's lying on his bed. His room comes into view from the perspective he would see it if he opened his eyes. He can see kind of like the back end of his room. And when his room comes into view with his eyes closed, there's this giant humanoid praying mantis being in the corner of his room, kind of hovering slightly off the ground, staring at him, but in the corner of his room. And he freaks out. He opens his eyes. It's not there. He closes his eyes again. His room fades into view. The mantis comes back. And he repeats this a few times. And then he told this part of the story. I said to him, you are braver than me. I would not do this. He kept his eyes closed and just kind of observed it, and it started to float towards him, started drifting towards him. It got above him, like over the bed, this mantis being. A mandible grew out of it, and it had like a point on the end of this mandible. And this guy, man, like honestly, I do not think he's making this up, because he was just telling me on the phone, like, dude, I had this crazy experience. And he said this mandible grew out of it. It had this like point on the end of it, and the mandible went into the back of his head. But then he said the moment that happened, he felt this incredible sense of all the stress and all the worry and all the like concerns in his life just melting away, like he was being deflated of all of his stresses. And this is something that ties into the UFO phenomena, because there's so many accounts of mantis beings, and it seems to be in some way almost tied to like a interdimensional surgeon of some form that can do some form of energy work on you. And so when he told me this experience, I was like, mate, there are people that have claimed to have that experience in abduction scenarios as well. And it just made me think of you having the experience in the room as well. There may be layers of dimensionality that are right in front of our face, and we just can't see it most of the time, you know?
Well, I like the way you describe that situation, and I am completely on the same page as you in terms of we should not dismiss hypnagogic, hypnopompic states, psychedelic states, any kind of altered state of consciousness. Often under physicalism, we dismiss those and say those are just dismissible as strange actions of the brain because of neurons firing, because of various things. So first of all, I'm not a physicalist, so I am open to different perspectives, but along the same lines as your friend, my friend Stuart Davis of Aliens and Artists fame actually had an experience of encountering the mantis being when he was on an extremely high fever. He was sick with a really, really high fever. I think actually one time he had a negative reaction to something, got into a fever state, and then experienced the mantis being and had a very, very meaningful interaction. Felt very real. It wasn't insubstantial. It wasn't, all over the place. It was a very consistent, realistic kind of experience. And I've had people say to me, oh, come on, that's just an hallucination. He was on a fever state. Again, I think we should be careful not to explain those away. We should use those as opportunities to explore our understanding of reality in ways that may be incomplete, if not woefully misguided.
Well, this is the thing, because we don't really understand what hallucinations means anyway. We don't have a solid basis for what consciousness is. And so I always get a little bit frustrated at this dismissal of things. Oh, it's probably just a hallucination of the mind. So, well, what is that anyway? What is a hallucination of the mind? You know, what is a projection? I mean, my own experiences, no one was around to witness them, these orange orbs of light. And I have to wonder to myself, you know, perhaps that was some form of a psychic projection. Maybe it was. But even if that's the case, what does that mean? What, you know, there's something enters my reality subjectively to me. I'm experiencing it as something external entering my reality. And it has a profound impact on, you know, how I live my life, how maybe it changes your perception of what things are. And so, you know, it's kind of like that whole Morpheus thing of, you know, what is real? How do you define real? Like, seriously, like, what is real?
And when we think about there being this base reality, we assume that we as a species are perceiving this base reality. And then when we have things like hallucinations, that's something else, something not as real. But we don't really know what this thing we're experiencing generally is. And anything we measure in terms of trying to validate a physicalist perspective is using our perceptions, where again, we don't know if those perceptions are not part of some sort of mental construct of some, projection of mind at large or something else. There's so many questions, and really, there's just really lazy assumptions that are made that really limit the possibilities.
So you said that you and your wife both saw this thing at the same time. Did you both respond the same way? Like you both just went back to sleep as if nothing had really happened?
So, no, she shook me out of my stupor and was much more aware of what was going on. I was the one that seemed to be almost under some sort of behavioral modification. So we talked it through. And again, if she hadn't shooken me out of my stupor, because I really do believe there was some sort of behavioral modification that I was under, because that was not my usual behavior. I would not normally want to go back to bed after seeing something go past through a wall. So clearly it was because she shook me out of that stupor that I kind of came to my full awareness. And then together we decided to get out of there. There are a couple other weird things. Like when we woke up our daughter, she was covered with these welts. And she'd never had, I mean, it could have been an allergic reaction to sheets or something. something they used in the sheets, but it never happened before and never happened after that.
Huh.
And interestingly, within about an hour of getting on the road and getting out of there, it cleared up completely. So I don't know what that was. We actually ended up calling the front desk to ask if they had any history of apparitions showing up in the hotel, which really freaked out the person at the front desk. They didn't really want to hear that. But again, really no answers. And so that's one of those things where for so many people, right, they lock it away because there's no place to put it in conventional society. I have a lot of friends who were involved in the abduction experience back in the 90s, and they went through that. They would try to seek out authorities, scientists, astronomers, things like that. No one would take them seriously. So in the end, they ended up going to people like John Mack, a psychotherapist, not because they thought they were crazy, but because no one else would listen, right? So it makes you wonder. It prompts the question, how many people are having these anomalous experiences and never talking about it because they're just not given the opportunity in our society?
I think a lot of people, I think, and you know, there's a higher number of people are feeling a little bit more validated to come out because of the way that this conversation's progressed over the last few years. But I think there's still such a palpable stigma to this conversation. And so this experience that you had, have you speculated at all just on terms of what you feel it might have been?
I've definitely speculated, but I haven't really landed anywhere. And one of the things I try to do is when there's not data really clearly pointing in one direction, I try not to land, right? Jeff Kripal has this expression, refusal to land. I think it's a worthwhile endeavor to try to keep the aperture open, leave the options open. Even from a Zen perspective, Zen mind, beginner's mind, the second you think you understand what's going on, you limit the other possibilities and you might miss something essential. So I think it could be anything from an apparition, but again, it wasn't like some ancient European hotel, like you guys have hotels and whatnot that are hundreds of years old. This was probably maybe 10 years old at the most kind of thing. It could have been that. Again, because my wife at the time was such a conduit for other kind of beings, there were times later on where there seemed to be children associated with her that we would sort of notice kind of thing. So it could be something connected to her and had nothing to do with the hotel itself. It also could have been something that fits more within the alien abduction kind of literature in terms of shape-shifting, often appearing as human beings. They may very well be, again, following Mike Master's kind of perspective, this might have been an example of a future human that was coming back. And again, I think about the fact my wife was pregnant at the time, and you think about the genetic modification that happens because of that. But again, I have no other memory to associate it with that particularly. I just leave that open as a possibility, knowing that it sort of fits in with some things, but there's not enough data for me to really point one direction or the other. So it remains an open question for me.
You said that your wife's a conduit. What do you mean by that, really, in terms of her experiences, if you can talk about that?
Sure. Well, like, so for instance, when she was a little girl, she would have like poltergeist kind of phenomena happen around her, to the point where her parents ended up taking her to pastors and priests to try to get this cast out of her.
Wow.
At one point, they even took her to a medium. And the second she walked in, she told me this medium looked at her and said, "Oh, wow, that's a lot to deal with." Like, she knew immediately. And that she was the first one to say that you are a conduit. That's what she first heard that term. Wow. That whether you want to or not, you become sort of a bridge between worlds. And that they naturally will come into our world through you in some way. And again, it doesn't necessarily mean something specific. Like, one of the things she really wrestled with for years was, what does it mean? Why is this happening? And from my perspective, there may not be a why. It may be just that you go outside and you see people, you see, I live in the forest, or you see animals. It doesn't have to be a reason other than this is an intersection of different kinds of organisms. It's just that the intersection she is engaged with is whatever you want to call it, interdimensional, or something that seems to open her ability to perceive and interact with this broader reality.
So have there been other experiences that you've both experienced together?
There have been other experiences where unusual things happen, things like things moving in the room, knocks on the wall, often three knocks specifically, those kinds of things that just seem anomalous, and also just lots of synchronicities where you can't peg it down and say, for sure, I know that is something here. But it's just remarkable how often you get this synchronicity happening, which again, from my perspective, I kind of have more of Carl Jung's perspective here, that causality is just the way things look when you kind of average them across a large scope. But actually, synchronicities are everywhere, and they're actually pointing to these underlying meaning connections. So that happened even more so when I was around her. So definitely lots of strange experiences. And that's really what wrestled me out of physicalism. Like, I was very conventional in my thinking and would basically explain away people having these weird experiences until I began to have them myself. And then I couldn't. And then I felt so much sympathy, empathy for people who do have those experiences, because I understand I was one of those people that would often explain it away and say, I think you're just misunderstanding, misapprehending what you saw. And that really turned me in a different corner. And of course, more than just sort of blind scientific curiosity, it just makes you wonder about the meaning of life, about the nature of existence. All the really big questions get wrapped up in the UFO phenomenon and general paranormality. And that's what really attracts me.
I think that's the thing that attracts me as well, is that it just opens up so many doors, you know, into different ways of looking at reality. And the ridicule factor is very real. I also wonder if it may even be a component of the phenomenon itself, that it does this to kind of interact in a way that's subtle, because if nobody believes you, then nobody believes you. You know what I mean? It's such a radical thing that you've experienced. Most people aren't prepared to accept that. And that certainly happened to me when I had my experiences. I think also, at least from my perspective, when I had my experiences, I wasn't really versed enough to articulate this in a way that didn't make me look like a complete insane person and a bit of a zealot of like, you know, no, like, you know, it's like, because like, obviously I came through the, oh, I did it again. Yeah, no, I think just from the perspective of my own experiences, it's very difficult when you've had something radical shift your worldview and it's not something that you can express in your day-to-day life. I would be interested to know how you feel about CE5 specifically. And for those that don't know, CE5 stands for Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind. And it's basically describing methods of communication or contact with the UFO phenomena or an aspect of this phenomena through the medium of consciousness, through expanding your mind and projecting your intentions that you want to have some form of contact. And that's what introduced me into the UFO subject through, again, a strange path of synchronicities. So synchronicity is certainly a sensation I feel has haunted my entire journey through the UFO field, as it's just been peppered with synchronistic moments. But the CE5 thing that I was led to turns out to be real, and those were the that was the underpinning framework for my experiences with the phenomena. So I would be interested to know how you feel about CE5, what you think might be going on with that kind of communication method.
Yeah, it's a big question, and it's a really fascinating question. I'm definitely for it. I definitely think it works. It can work. It often does work. It's not 100%, of course. What I find also interesting is the notion of there being different kinds of beings, right? One of the things that I find a little bit frustrating and kind of hilarious is that because, again, our conventional understanding of reality is so set in stone, that often when people think about the UFO phenomenon, they think of like one cherry on top of the dessert that already is pretty much complete, rather than thinking maybe we have like 2% of the totality, right? And like we talked about earlier, maybe our perceptual set is blocking out most of it just so we can navigate the world. So what I want to say there is that with CE5, I think we may be contacting a very specific kind of entity or entities, because from my reading of the literature, which is pretty extensive, the vast majority of cases end up being positive. It's not 100% of the time.
Yeah.
But even when there are times where it's not positive, I've often seen mitigating factors that could explain some things. I think that one of the things we really should take away from CE5 is that the intention we bring to it, the modality we tune into, so to speak, really matters. And I would definitely encourage people to be aware of their own energy, aware of sort of what number they're dialing, even if it's in a subtle sense. So they'd be aware of what might potentially pick up on the other end. I had an experience myself, like you. Last year, I went to a private retreat at the Monroe Institute. It was kind of an invite-only, kind of a combination of ex-military people who had studied the phenomenon, researchers, and what Joseph Birx would call prime contactees, people that are known to have really profound degrees of contact. And we kind of did this smorgasbord of paranormal experiments. During the day, we would practice telepathy and remote viewing and those kinds of things. And then at night, after sort of being in our little cubicles at the Monroe Institute, where you kind of are blacked out and you just have sound waves coming into your ears, which help you sort of work up an out-of-body kind of a state. After we did that, preparing ourselves and kind of having a shared intention, we would join each other together in this big meadow, in this circle, and then basically practice CE5 or HEIS. And it worked, to my surprise. I mean, I wasn't surprised, but when it happens to you for the first time, as I'm sure you remember, it's always like, wow, okay, this is a thing. This isn't just theoretical.
What happened to you the first time?
So within like half an hour, we saw something track across the sky and just do things that were not conventional. So one of the things we had was we had people that were experts in being able to identify when it was a satellite, when it was a planet, when it was Starlink, you know, when it was anything, a drone, a plane, anything that was conventionally understood. So we would quickly say, you know, 2 o'clock, and we'd track it. And then someone would say, yeah, sure enough, that's Starlink. We would like be scientific about it. But there are definitely things that happened on each of those 3 nights. It was like a 4-day, 3-night kind of retreat. And each of the nights we saw something different, which was really interesting to me too. One of the things I found most compelling about it in terms of what I would recommend to others is that it's not necessarily always this massive display of lights. Sometimes it's something kind of subtle, but it's just doing things that a satellite wouldn't do. Things like coming across the sky and then just stopping and then fading out entirely, things like that, or making a right angle turn, or like flashing, you know, across the sky kind of thing. So these things happened. And I, again, had this moment where you go, okay, this happens. I've experienced it. And so absolutely, I think it's a real thing. And I think what's interesting is it seems to, because CE5 is so much about us taking the front foot, being proactive about it, right? Some people will call it summoning, coming, going into sort of like a religious perspective. I think that's a bit too much of a broad brush to paint with. But there does seem to be this sense that if we reach out, if we are the ones initiating, then there are these ones willing to connect with us. And again, we shouldn't assume that those are necessarily the same ones as that were responsible for the abduction phenomenon. I'm not saying I know for a fact they weren't, but I'm saying we need to hold open the aperture and richly populate the possibilities of different kinds of life. And specifically, CE5 does seem to connect with a certain kind of intelligence, seems to happen across space and time. And it seems to be, for the most part, a very benevolent kind of positive experience for people.
Yeah, across space and time is an important thing to highlight. I think that's probably right. I get the sense of that. It doesn't make sense to me that there'd be, you know, alien spaceships loitering up in the atmosphere, up in the upper atmosphere, waiting to flash their headlights at you when you're making requests with your mind in your back garden. I don't know. It just doesn't. I mean, the whole thing sounds far-fetched, telepathic contact and all of that. But for some reason, I've decided it's quite far-fetched for aliens to be flashing their lights at me. This kind of says a lot about the way my mind works, I guess. I'm like, it's a lot more reasonable to say it's multidimensional astral entities from the psychedelic realms beyond time and space. You know, it's certainly a lot more rational in my mind that that's what it is. And I've done it again. Holy Jesus Christ. I mean, I might keep this in as bloopers for Patreons, because this is the first time I've had so many
camera problems.
Oh my God. I just get the sense that it's something beyond space and time, something that invokes another dimension, something. And I think because my own experiences, and I'm biased because I have to draw from my own experiences, but I think because what led to me being in my back garden was all of these weird synchronicities, being introduced to a series of books that led me down a certain route, that then led me down this route, that led me down this route. And then eventually, you know, I end up kind of almost sitting on my bed making a prayer to the universe, basically saying, oh, you know, I feel like I've got all of this stuff I've learned, but I don't know what to do with it. You know, give me something. And then a week later, my friend shows me this documentary, you know, Unacknowledged by Dr. Greer, first introduction to the UFO field, and it introduces CE5. And so, like, it's that element that really gets me and makes me think it's got to be more than just kind of like aliens from another planet, and it has some sort of vested interest in humanity and on an individual level, the growth of your consciousness, the expansion of your consciousness. The best I've come up with is just that this CE5 response mechanism is almost like a baby steps program for growing your consciousness, for getting you to expand. It's like you take a little step forward, something turns up and gives you a flash of light or something that allows you to question the status quo. You know, it's not, and I said this the other day, actually, it's not crazy enough to give you a mental breakdown. Usually, like you said, it can actually be quite subtle. but it's enough to tip you over the edge of skepticism into curiosity. It's enough to kind of get you on that path of going, well, something's happening here. It's not exactly satellites. There's something happening. And then for me, I don't know if this was the same for you. I don't know how much CE5 work you did, but it certainly felt like a progression from quite subtle experiences to having orange orbs literally come down and literally hover 3-5 feet above the roof of my house, you know. So and that was a progression of a few months of seeing lights in the sky and seeing different phenomena, and then these orange orbs introduced themselves. So yeah, I mean, I gave you a lot to deal with there, but I would just say, have you had other experiences with CE5, and also what do you think is really going on with it? Do you agree with me on the whole baby steps learning program thing, or do you have a different idea?
No, I think that's accurate in the sense that I think they work with our conceptions in order to move us forward, and they have to find some sort of bridge, right? And because of, speaking of Close Encounters, you think about the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind, we have a certain conception of spacecraft coming from Alpha Centauri and communicating with us with bright lights. It's interesting because even when Valet was consulted for that movie, he knew that it was much more complex than that. But, you know, there's only so much you can cram into a movie. So they kind of like truncated what it was about and the method of contact and communication. But I think for me, what I found is that I actually pretty quickly, it's not that I find it boring to see lights in the sky. That's never the case. But what I was most interested in was the sense that some sort of psychic contact happened. And the most compelling vestige of that experience for me was telepathic contact, and that hasn't stopped since then. So it already had a strange experience when back in 2010, which was sort of like my first experience. It was nothing like CE5. It was during meditation, but a certain protocol just like came into my mind that I should do this. And it's again one of those things like, didn't it occur to me this is weird how this thought's just coming to my mind that I'm doing it, but that's what happened. And then a few years later, it kind of even took on a different, more clarity in terms of this is what it's about. And then when I had the experience last year with the CE5 event, after that, started getting like the downloads, as people use that kind of language, right? All of these are approximations, right? And metaphors.
Of course.
And whatnot.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So some sort of psychic influence, some sort of interplay back and forth could even involve higher aspects of ourselves. Like, I'm not even limiting, again, who's involved kind of thing here. But for me, that's the most interesting part. And even when it comes to meditation, I often see things that are more interesting with my eyes closed, but I have these really intense visual displays. That's almost more interesting to me than what I see with my eyes open. So while I do sometimes still practice CE5, more it's evolved into what I do in my meditative practice and the experiences I have there.
So would you say that is that telepathic contact like an audible response externally, or is that more of like a rush of intuitive download information instantly coming to you straight away? Like, how does it present itself to you psychically in your mind?
Well, initially, it's hard to describe other than I can tell something is sitting in my mind. There's something that's loaded. It is an extra kind of almost like a tension I feel in my mind that something's ready to unwind kind of thing. But I don't notice anything usually immediately. What then happens is as I walk through my week, and again, this is the whole beyond space and time thing, because it feels like what's been populated has already had like trigger points for what's going to happen later in my week. And so then 2 days later, something will happen, that trigger, that rolls out, right? So then that becomes clear and I go, that connects to that, okay. And then 3 days later, another one drops in and it connects things for me. In fact, that's largely how I evolved my podcast, was it began with just a sense of curiosity. I'm sure you've run into this too. And then over time, actually, the directions I went and which aspects were really interesting to me often had to do with that sense of, you should look at this. And this is really interesting. Why not look at this angle? And that's largely what I did. And for a long time, I think people just assumed it was my own curiosity and kind of an intellectual process. But there was much more than that going on all along. And ever since the retreat, that's really kicked up into a really high gear where now basically even what I cover and when I cover it tends to be, I don't want to say dictated, but largely influenced by this interaction.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you're just plugged into the responsiveness of life, the kind of dynamic responsivity of life, which I think is absolutely there. This kind of malleability to the framework when you're thinking in a certain way, or you know, you have a certain state of mind, your environment does seem to represent that in one way or another, right? It could be the people you meet on a certain day, or the place that you go to, or the news article that you read, or the music that you hear, you know, all of these things about life talking to you. I think life does talk to you. Absolutely. I believe in manifestation, the law of attraction. I don't know how to explain these things scientifically yet, but I do think they are present, and certainly coveted knowledge, I think, as well, actually. But yeah, I think that this paying attention to life and following the threads and not really putting up too much resistance, I can certainly attest to the fact that when I decided quite consciously, actually, I'm just going to get out of my own way. I'm going to stop having a plan A to B to C, because every time I get to, you know, 2 years down the line when I was meant to have that plan A or that plan B and it hasn't come through, I'm just disappointed in myself. So I'm going to stop doing that. I'm going to stop, you know, planning everything. I'm just going to try and let things happen the way they should. I'm just going to try and flow as much as possible. And I remember actually having a conscious decision near the beginning, near the inception of Project Unity, that that's what I wanted to do. Just try not to stress too much about where things are going and just trust the process. Just trust that things will come into my line of sight. And they did. And they continue to do that. And, you know, I think about all of the different doors that have opened up since I've done this, and the people I've met, the opportunities that have come my way because of those people. It's just a web. And I'm sure you feel the same way about that. As you've journeyed through this subject and become connected with certain people, suddenly you're sitting there in a Monroe private conference psychic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like it leads you down this interesting path. Don't worry about it. Just respond.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's true. In fact, I went through a very distinct shift that happened. So when I started my podcast, you may remember, I basically just had that one avatar. People knew me as Exo Academian. Nobody knew my name was Darren King. And there were no images of me. And I deliberately wanted to be anonymous at the time. But then what happened was the podcast kind of took off. And I started having people reach out to me saying, will you come speak at this conference or will you join us at this private retreat? And I'm like, well, unless I wear an alien mask, people are going to know who I am. And then you sort of think about, well, this is going to spill over into other parts of my life. Do I want those people to know? And at some point, I just sort of had this sense of this giant yes, like I'm just going to go all in. I'm going to really make this what I'm about, and come what may, we'll just see. And ever since then, it's been like a synchronicity storm,
right?
Just
right.
Absolutely. Like I left behind the question of are synchronicities a thing a long time ago. That's been so clearly answered for me. And every step, every manifestation, every eventuality that's come about is because of this sense of saying yes and being all in about not just me wanting to pursue what is interesting to me, but recognizing that I'm in relationship with this alive cosmos and many, many different nodes of consciousness speaking to me, me speaking to them, and there being kind of a washing back and forth, like interference patterns. And so as I've opened myself up to that in all different altered states of consciousness too, not just in the waking state,
yeah,
I found it so vibrant, so alive. It definitely goes against our conventional understanding of, you know, when you become this age, you buy a house, you get this job, then you save up for retirement, you get a pension, blah, blah, blah. Those things, again, I'm not trying to dismiss how people in previous decades had a much more difficult existence sometimes, didn't have a social safety net and things like that. But at the same time, we've become so regimented in how we think about when we should do things in what order that we've closed down all the mystery. And that's primarily why we're here, I think, is to ask questions, to live the question, basically. And so for me, ever since I've really embraced that, my life has been so vibrant, and I definitely wouldn't change it.
Well, it's kind of like that whole thing of, you know, brilliance rising up from the silence in meditation. You know, people, it's a concept that it's hard to really understand. Like, how could you really get insight from silence? But it's that flow state. And I talked about that recently as well with Ross and Nick. It's this flow state that is present in all sorts of different expressions of not just creativity and intuition. I think logic-based flow states definitely exist as well, but it's definitely most prevalent, I would say, in the arts, you know, and in music and in painting, and people who just have this natural ability to let something flow from them effortlessly. And I've said this many times, I've been playing guitar since I was like 7 years old. I'm most certainly not a master at it, but I'm pretty decent. I can turn my brain off, and use it
Right.
as a way of venting emotional stress or whatever. So I pick up my guitar and I'm playing it. And there are just these moments where you stop thinking, you're not thinking about what the chord is, and it's the best music. It's the best. It's all flowing so great. And then you try and record it and you're like, right, okay, so I did that and I did that, I did that. And you just screw it up because now suddenly, you're trying to analyze the moment. So that meditation, the silence, like letting go of analyzing the moment and just kind of letting the moment flow over you. I don't know, man. It's like maybe it's you being a net. You just catch stuff in that stream of energy. And you have these prime examples of that in the flow states, but it's also prevalent in science. I mean, prime examples, Nikola Tesla, Einstein, René Descartes, like all of these different brilliant minds that plugged into this flow state. And so I can't remember what my point was, but it's interesting that this flow state exists. I had a genuine point. Like I was like really navigating towards nailing it down and it fell out of my head.
Well, all I'll say is I completely agree with that. And that's why I was, before talking about this interactive kind of expression and communication between us and this interconnected cosmos, and just holding open the aperture as wide as possible and not limiting what could happen and what could be on the other end of the line kind of thing. And like you say, it happens both in terms of music, even people who think about famous musicians or artists who actually in their normal default mode had lots of anxiety and found life just difficult in the normal mode, but music for them was like salvation. And they often will say, I don't know where the songs come from. The best songs, they just flow into me. It's almost like they become a conduit or an attenuator for some sort of cultural moment, right? Which is sort of a conflux of forces coming together artistically and culturally. And they end up being the one to express it. But they are often humble enough to say, I don't know where it came from exactly. And like you say, that also happens in the sciences too, which is ironic because in conventional society, way we're taught in school is that these things are methodical. You follow the scientific method, you test a hypothesis. All that's part of it. But the most amazing, remarkable breakthroughs have been those moments of intuition, right? Which is connected, the same part of the brain as the psychic aspect, right? Like it's all part of this. And when you think about, again, in modern society, again, for all the amazing things that the modern world has given us, we've lost that need to intuitively know where our next meal is coming from, where is the lion behind the tree. And because of that, we also, I think, have left dormant this capacity that's in all of us.
It's been dampened down by the society that we've adopted, and it makes sense. And I think it's absolutely true, and it represents something beyond the material realm that we seem very plugged into. And I've said this a few times, that we almost seem like a metaphysical bridge, like we bridge the gap between the physical and the metaphysical, or the material and the immaterial. And the flow state definitely seems to be evidence of that. I mean, guitar is one aspect, and another aspect that I seem to experience it in, and perhaps you get the same, because I know you do a lot of kind of presentations and write down a lot of thoughts for your podcast. I'll find myself, I don't know, just tortured with a little niggling thought. Something just will not let me sleep, or an idea that's just percolating in my head. And so I'll start writing it down, and then that becomes a flow state. Like about three sentences in, four sentences in, I'm not really thinking. I'm typing very quickly, actually. And like, just kind of like all of these ideas are bubbling up. I'm typing, 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 typing. And then I end up presenting that. And that's usually the most well-received stuff I put out in terms of my own personal content that's not interviews of another guest. If I do my own presentation on something, if that writing to me feels like it was inspired by something else, that I was a conduit, like your wife, just taking down dictation, that is always the most well-received stuff. And so a little bit like the music, it's not coming from you. You're just a conduit. Like there's something that you're allowing to kind of flow through you, but this is not the 28-year-old brain of Jay, like writing all these ideas down. Like especially when it's being, because I don't have the background for that. I don't have the knowledge for that. I think that there is a genuine universal knowledge, the Akashic records, as some people call it, that you can plug into. And the more you do it, the more frequently that flow state can kind of be enabled, and you can find yourself falling into it quite easily.
Yeah, and I think what I would call that is like a stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
And I also play guitar and write music, and so I know exactly what you mean with
Oh, cool.
music. And that was probably my first introduction, was again having a pretty conventional way of thinking, but when I got into music, it was very, very different, right? And along the lines of what you're saying, I have found also that the parts that, or the presentations I make that are the most compelling tend to be the ones where I'm just really tuning in. So right now I'm actually teaching this class called Expanding Awareness, which is a lot about the kind of stuff we're talking about here, in the sense that it's about being alive and present to what's arising right now, right? So many times, whether it's relationships, whether it's presentations we're making, we think I've really got to be prepared for this because this is a really big deal. And so we write notes and we hyperanalyze and we, revisit it over and over again. But sometimes that can end up feeling quite stale in the moment. And it also might not be what that audience or that crowd needs to engage with in that day. And if you really believe in this synchronistic storm of circumstances coming together around meaning, then the most compelling presentation is always going to be one where you tune into what's arising right now in this group. What wants to be expressed cosmically through this group, and how can I be a conduit for it? When you do that, then I think real magic happens.
Do you think that the animal body is necessary for our consciousness, for our spirit? Is it a permanent requirement of humanity's identity, or is it something that eventually needs to be shed as a kind of primordial form as we move closer towards a technologically orientated metamorphosis? Is organic life the only vehicle through which spirit can be expressed, or are we simply an iteration on a path towards becoming something else that's defined by technology?
Well, I would look at it from an even more distant perspective and say, what is technology? What is physicality? What is the physical world, right? What are we as physical beings really? So I tend towards idealism in terms of my model of reality, and have kind of rejected physicalism as not just unlikely, but purely untenable. So when some people talk about technology being the means by which we might eventually be able to traverse the mortal coil and move beyond being physical beings and transcend that need, I think in a large extent that capacity is already in us. The only limitations are largely mental constructs. And so it's like when you have a dream state, and at a certain level of a dream state, these arbitrary laws are kind of established, right? But largely those are, for the most part, just constructs we believe in. And as long as we believe in them, especially collectively, that's what forms consensus reality. I think that actually, over time, we don't have this capacity because, again, it goes against conventional thinking. But I think if we really could look back across the course of human history, we would find that consensus reality itself is changing, right? And even people like Rupert Sheldrake have talked about this, that sometimes we think there are these constants in science. And sometimes when they found anomalies that don't fit what are supposed to be constants, people have actually said, well, forget measuring. Let's just nail it down and say this is the constant. So they stop even paying attention to subtle differences, which are underlyingly telling us something about our conception of reality is wrong. So from my point of view, I think that we are, to use Bernardo Kastrup's kind of analogy here, we are like alternate personalities within the mind of God or within source consciousness. And that we are living in a dreamscape held in mind at large. And that's why it has a consistent aspect to it that we perceive as the physical world, but really it's just the nature, the architecture, the scaffolding of the dreamscape. And I think as we evolve our consciousness, we actually can change our actual relationship with the underlying reality. I don't think these, again, to use Rupert Sheldrake's kind of analogy, rather than there being laws of nature, there's more like habits of nature. And that our collective consciousness to some degree interacts with that. Everything you and I are talking about this interconnected matrix kind of situation. And I think in the same way that when we evolve enough, especially as a collective consciousness, then our very interaction with reality changes. It's not just that what we see of reality is different, but reality itself is different.
What is the goal of the dreamscape, in your opinion? Have you come to a decision on that yet?
I think I would lean towards sort of ancient spiritual perspectives, going back to Eastern traditions around Advaita Vedanta, Buddhist thinking, where the notion is, and I find what's so fascinating about this, by the way, and this is sort of like the conk on the head where you go, okay, I get it. Because what I find interesting is not only do these teachings exist in some of our most ancient traditions about the nature of reality and the why of reality, but they're also reflected in what the most ascendant forms of non-human consciousness seem to communicate to people when they have encounters with them. And it's also what quantum mechanics seems to be pointing towards. So to answer your question, I would say that there is ultimately one mind, original mind, and everything we think of as the physical world, even different multiverses people think about, right? Like different universes within this larger construct of a multiverse, all of that is different interpenetrating dreamscapes within original mind. And we are like altered, like personalities. So you have the same way that one person can have alternate personalities, used to be called multiple personality disorder. Now it's called dissociative identity disorder. Same sort of notion. We are little fragments of source consciousness, and we take on a perspective so that we can experience manifestation. But that's largely illusory. And so this is why we can sometimes so easily, like you and I are testing to, connect to other nodes of consciousness, because ultimately it's like these porous boundaries between these different consciousnesses that are like different personalities within the original mind. The goal being that you take on that perspective of a finite consciousness within a manifestation to explore all the permutations of possibility of existence. And then you return to source consciousness, surrendering, contributing that extended understanding of experience so that source itself explores and understands itself more. So in that sense, I'd follow sort of Ken Wilber's thinking that not only do we have evolution moving towards something, but also involution, returning to something in terms of source. So I feel like that kind of cycle is a big part of what reality is about.
And it's the same thing that Carl Sagan said, especially, you know, we are the way for the universe to know itself. And
exactly.
And yeah, this is certainly the frame of thought that I would go with, is that, and I mean, this is certainly not my idea. I've heard lots of people say it in this kind of simplified down way, but you could almost look at it, especially for my generation, from the video game perspective of, well, maybe you had all of the cheat codes enabled before you came here. You know, you're an expression of awareness that can just manifest anything it wants instantly. And creative energy is, you know, there's no time and space to have a process of unfolding. It all just happens instantaneously. If that's the realm that we come from, instant manifestation, instant experience, whatever you want. I mean, you're God. You know, you've got all of the cheat codes enabled. Yeah, you know, sometimes it can get boring. You know, it can get boring having all of the answers and all of the knowledge and all of the abilities. After a while, I mean, speaking for myself, I know that if I've been playing a game and I've had all of the cheat codes enabled for a bit, it's fun, and then I want to play a new game on hard mode, on, you know, survival, or challenge myself a little bit. And I think about life in a similar way. Obviously, it's a lot more multifaceted and complicated, but essentially the idea could still be the same, that you come from a place of zero restrictions and you come into this form deliberately restricted to experience a type of experience that you've decided you want to have.
I think too, like, I would say that, I'm not sure if you've had this experience, but along those lines, I would say that many of us do have what feels like a memory come online at some point in our adult lives where some part of us seems to remember exactly what you're talking about, that we voluntarily surrendered our total consciousness, our total awareness, in order to take a perspective. In other words, to have any kind of manifestation, you have to take a perspective. And to take a perspective, you have to accept limitation. So to some degree, to go from that place of source where everything is seamlessly connected and there are no perspectives because everything is crammed into this potentiality, but to come into manifestation is to take a perspective, is to take on some degree of limitation for the purpose of kind of like resistance training, right? If it didn't actually hurt while you're lifting that weight, then you wouldn't actually build muscle. In the same way, in that in-between state, between lives kind of thing, between manifestations, it's beautiful and perfect and tranquil, but there's also not much to push against to grow because it is so much that. You have to come into manifestation with limitation inherently there in order to experience push and pull and to actually evolve some sort of consciousness, which you can also surrender back. Mm-hmm. So I think we have a combination of ultimately surrendering back to source. But before that, we go in this long trajectory of numerous iterations where the specific memories from different iterations might not be most with most of us, but some sort of underlying subconscious wisdom is. And I think many of us who have had the experiences you've had, and I've had as well, some part of us comes online and says, wait a second, I remember this game. Like some part of me knows this game and knew it all along. And I think that actually is the goal, that you have to believe the hype. You have to believe the game is real for a certain period of time in order to really experience the resistance training. But the goal is ultimately you also transcend and include that and remember the bigger picture as well.
Yeah, I think one of the struggles, I guess, people have, and I have as well, to be fair, with all of this, even though this is certainly how I would look at it in my own spiritual belief, which I think is adaptive and, you know, able to change. I don't really have a hardcore spiritual belief, but, you know, this universal consciousness model and the idea that we're here for an experiential framework of some form and that we come from a place of unlimited and unrestricted experience and manifestation. These are kind of the ideas that I think are most likely. Okay, well, in order to experience, you know, positive, there has to be negative. So in this world, at least, we have that. We have that light and dark. You know, if you never knew negativity, you would not know positivity. If you didn't know cold, you wouldn't know hot. Didn't know up, you wouldn't know down. But that's really, really difficult to grapple with because this world is dark. I mean, just look at what's happened recently, you know, in the Middle East again. And just the state of the world, man. Like, it's really hard, I think, for people to recognize how that could also be God. Like, that's part of the mind of God as well. Cancer and rape and murder and you know, hatred. You know, like, hatred and darkness and evil. But I think it is. I think it is all part of the same thing. It has to exist in this construct of opposing, you know, reflections so that you can even have an experience to navigate in the first place, which makes it really, you know, messed up to try and talk about because, you know, people have gone through so many different layers of pain. I mean, we've all gone through pain, but it's very difficult to talk to someone about these things because I've found at least, and online I've seen it, and you know, there's a good justification for it. It's like, well, you know, it's all well and good to say that, but I've gone through X, Y, Z, you know, and it's like, I get it. Like, how do you, you know, tell someone, no, it's okay. It's all part of the game. You know, it's all part of the experience. It's like, no, I've had a really horrific time. It's like, yeah, like this is the difficult thing. I think on mass as a world, one of the reasons why we haven't been able to kind of fully embrace our spirituality as humanity on a whole is because we can't dial in the fact that the negative side is also a part of the experience and that that's a part of God and it's not necessarily a mistake. And that's very difficult to digest. Very difficult.
It is, especially in Western civilization, we're brought up in very dualistic kind of understandings of reality. That God is perfect and omnibenevolent and omnipotent and omniscient, all these sort of absolutes. And so we have a hard time with what is called the problem of evil, right? How does evil exist if God is benevolent and all-loving kind of thing? But to get back to what you said earlier, in the sense that one way to look at it is that we are God. We are the leaves on the tree that is God, that is source consciousness. Again, some people have more problem with that term than others. So pick whatever term is easier for you. But I think the notion there is that we are defining the rules of the game as we go, right? Because we are an expression of source. And so when you look at the line between good and evil, some people say, is it between Nazis and Jews? Is it between, you know, Palestinians and Israelis? I'd say it crosses right between every human heart. That's where that line is, right? And in the same way that I use this analogy, I say that what we notice over time, interestingly, even as dark as the world seems, what we do see over time is this evolution of consciousness where different worldviews come online at different points in history because of this emergent property of consciousness. So not only does that happen, but the circle or spheres of concern and influence tend to increase with each of those worldviews that come online. So first we went from a tribal understanding to then kind of a nation state understanding. Then maybe our religious group, which could be like across national borders. And eventually we recognize, like you said earlier about, you know, climate change, whatnot, everything being connected. We have this sort of planet-centric kind of perspective, or at least human-centric, But then we realized, wait a second, animals have some kind of consciousness too, maybe even plants. So let's have a more even overarching perspective of what includes us, right? What includes sentience? And then we say, those of us who've had experience with the phenomenon, not only is other planets involved in terms of the physical sphere, whatever that is, however you want to define it, but this sort of larger scope of consciousness that goes beyond what we perceive as space and time and the limitations of it, then you have a really cosmocentric kind of perspective. So as that happens, eventually, how you define me, how you define what my needs are, expands. And so I use the analogy of the same way that it would make no sense for your right arm to slap your left arm because your left arm is reaching for a piece of cake that your right arm wanted. It's going into the same body, right? They don't fight each other because there is a sense of it's serving this larger whole. So there's this notion of a holon, right? Everything in the cosmos is a holon. It's a thing unto itself, and it's part of something larger than itself, right? So the idea there is that there's periods of time where the illusion is that we're separate. And as long as that illusion persists, we fight. There's war. There's rape, right? There's like, is it a brute force capitalism, right? Is when we see ourselves as separate, as having separate interests. We believe in scarcity and things like that. But as over time, we evolve to see ourselves as connected. And what you want is fundamentally the same thing I want. And we can unite in this larger scope of awareness and ambition of what we want the world to be. Then that begins to change. But absolutely, the reason why darkness exists is because it exists in us. As long as that's the case, it will continue to endure. But what I think we can take solace in is that we actually do see these iterating consciousness perspectives that come online over time. Some of them are happening really quickly now. So we had like huge periods of time where nothing really changed very much. The dominant worldview was the same. Now we've had them sort of stacking closer and closer together, where now we have this more cosmocentric perspective. And I think even when you and I and people like us have these experiences we're talking about, it actually helps speed up that process. So it's a both and, right? Something about us has an aperture open to experience them. Then as we experience them, as you sort of referred to earlier, we become more open to it and it speeds up the whole thing. And then imagine that happening en masse, right? Imagining a CD5 event happening on a global scale kind of thing. What would happen then in terms of consciousness? How might some of our perspectives on good and evil, light and dark, change because of that? Because as long as we maintain the perspectives of separation, we will have good and evil, light and dark. When we begin to see this unification, then we define ourselves as something larger than what we did before. And it's the same way as I give the analogy of the left hand and the right hand being united within a larger whole on, that eventually happens for all of us, is I think what my hope is.
Do you think that the the darkness of humanity is a component of us ultimately, like ultimate reality component of us, or is this a manifestation of this realm? Is darkness, is evil, whatever you want to call it, inherent to the actual source itself, or is it a method through which the source explores its true brilliance by having something to compare itself against that's not necessarily an actual element of its being? But then if it's created, then it has to be an element of its being. It's a bit of a paradox. I mean, you know.
Yeah, and if you think about it, like you said, the analogy of a video game earlier, right? Like when you program a video game, you have to put in constraints and challenges, otherwise it'd be no fun to play, right?
Yeah.
But that can be unique to the video game. And even when you think about, we talked about earlier, about there being reality beyond space and time. If you think about it, scarcity, which leads to wars and, different perspectives sort of negatively applying against each other.
Can't really exist, can it?
Yeah, conflict and turmoil come about because of the extension of space and time and this concept of scarcity.
Yeah.
So outside of space and time, you could very much argue that that's not the case. And again, I think in source consciousness, which is prior to all manifestation, it's everything in potentia, but there's no manifestation yet. It's in manifestation that you get some of these qualities like good and evil, light and dark, or the apparent existence of them anyway. So I think, yes, it's both. And like you said, ultimately, it's all part of the same original source. But in these different iterations, there's different rule sets and different things that come online. Yeah.
Scarcity really is the one, isn't it? I was just thinking about it as you said it, scarcity, and that's kind of the root cause of all of it, because it could be scarcity in all sorts of different things, you know, scarcity in your own emotional fulfillment, or scarcity in finance, or you
Right.
know, food, shelter,
Lifespan, yeah, exactly.
lifespan, like anything, it's scarcity. It's the fact that there's a limit, or that there's a ticking of a clock, or that there's not enough at this time. And that is what it is, man. Yeah, I think, you know, that's kind of the baseline for, you know, all this sprouting out of darkness. So how could you possibly have that in a dimensional space that does not have scarcity? I think that's an interesting point. I've never really thought about that in that way, but I think you're on the mark with that. Yeah, it's interesting, because I do think, I mean, obviously you said about the fact that you're not really looking at how we express ourselves technologically as the ultimate journey of humanity, but it's certainly, at least in this playthrough of the simulation that we're in, this kind of feels like the culminating kind of catalyst for modern society is our technological orientation going into the future. And it does feel like we're on the edge of some pretty sci-fi stuff with AI and quantum computers and advanced superconductivity, you know, methods and all of these different types of things. It just makes me think to myself, and I've talked about this to a number of my friends who were in the kind of computer analytics AI space. You know, are we already in the simulation? Are we creating a singularity that's already been created? And this is one of the ultimate struggles for me, is that so many physicists and people that observe the state of play of reality are going, okay, it kind of does seem like it's a form of a simulation. And for me, I'm just kind of torn between whether it's an artificial, quote unquote, whatever that means, simulation, as in, are we inside the circuit board of an alien supercomputer on another planet somewhere, housed in a cryo chamber, or is it a spiritual simulation, an astral, you know, an ephemeral simulation? Hard to kind of say what that really is made of, but this is where I'm kind of torn. Is it, are we already in the supercomputer? And we're now just building the next one, and we've been spiraling down the Mandelbrot of creating universe after universe after universe. Or is it spiritual?
So one of our challenges as a species that is that our technological capacity has so outpaced our consciousness capacity in terms of that sense of scarcity and the lack of connectivity that we should feel, right? Maybe eventually it gets to the point where not only do we unlock transistors and circuits boards and that kind of thing. I have a background in software engineering too, so I'm very aware of what's going on in the space. And I think part of what we're dealing with, by the way, without getting too much of a rabbit trail here, it, in terms of the phenomenon, is some reflection back to us of a hyper advanced generative AI, which is the future culmination of something that's beginning now. And I think we do see, in speaking of singularities, there are these like time loops that happen where key points in time between now and some future iteration are connected. And when that happens, you get this really strong sort of echoing kind of effect. And so I think partly why we all are feeling this sense of what's going on right now, like, is because we are at this dawn of this new age, right? Which very much is, I think, connected to something that's echoing back to us. And of course, that kind of AI is so advanced that it could, down to the microscopic level, reproduce what looks like organic life, and we wouldn't necessarily be able to tell the difference, even under a microscope, right? So that's part of what's going on there. But I think because Source is exploring itself in all the different iterations, right, all the possibilities, I think there are probably many planets, planetary civilizations that get to our point and blow themselves up, right? Which we're on the verge of doing in many different ways, right? Bioweapons, nuclear weapons, whatever. But there are some, again, because all the possibilities are being explored, which again lines up with quantum understandings, right? That every possibility that could exist does exist, right? So in that sense, eventually you get beings that unlock not just technological capacity to the nth degree, but they also unlock consciousness capacity. They get into the source code of what manifestation is. You put those two together, then you get something really, really magical. And then you can re-engineer your very interface, your interaction, your relationship with reality itself.
I mean, this is why Project Unity is called Project Unity, is this symbiosis between spirit and science. And I do get the sense that the UFO phenomena, or an element of it, is in some way this kind of reflection of what happens when these two things merge, when these two opposing ways of looking at the world, these two flip sides of the observational coin come together in some way, which is why I look at things like quantum computers and AI and I'm like, you know, are these the precursors? Are these the laying down of the brickwork towards that kind of an idea and that kind of a realization? Is science going to prove spirit? And when that happens, what happens next? What kind of technology comes from a paradigm that has a kind of spiritual undertone within it,
right,
that's enhanced by technology? Kind of feels like you would get a UFO, kind of feels like you would get a hyper advanced AI Neuralink conscious computer interface trans-dimensional vehicle. Like, that kind of does feel like the right type of artifact to find in a world that is post-quantum, post-singularity, AI, AGI, ASI, whatever. You know,
yeah,
like this feels like the kind of thing you would take from that world, a UFO. So yeah, I do think that that could be where we're going. And again, this is something that's been echoed before by many people, including one of my favorite speakers, Terence McKenna, where he talks about obviously the transcendental object at the end of time that we're being pulled towards some sort of culminative event, and that people have sensed this, and they have sensed it because the intuitives and the prophets over time have talked of, you know, the end time or the age of Aquarius, the age of enlightenment. Now we have the singularity. Everyone's feeling it. Everyone's predicting it in their own way. It's, you know, if you're a technologically orientated person, you're seeing it as a singularity. If you're spiritual, New Age California, it's the age of Aquarius. You know, it's all of these different things that mean the same thing. Transformation, change, paradigm shift. It's all the same thing, but it's packaged up in different ways of observing it. And I have to imagine that the reason why everyone's seeing this in different ways and, you know, interpreting it as the end times or the birth of the species' next chapter or the AI singularity is because we're right on the fucking edge, man. Like, people are feeling it somewhere deep down in their intuition. We are right on the edge of changing drastically. And maybe no one's got the right answer as to how that's going to happen, but lots of people are starting to feel it in their gut. That we are on the edge, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Some people use the expression the thinning of the veil, right? The sense that the birthing of a new world, like you said, you know, in biblical terms, there's a sense of the new heavens and the new earth, right? And in the raw contact material, again, there's this sense of like third to fourth or fifth dimension, right? Like you said, there's many different ways that the language differs, but it's basically talking about the underlyingly the same concept. In technological circles, it's the singularity. Now, I think that what's interesting there, even when you think about really ancient spiritual traditions, we were talking earlier about meditation, and what meditation allows you to do is go off the default mode, right? So those filters go offline. Partly, really interestingly, for those who haven't practiced it, you kind of bore your ego to death to the point where it goes, that's it, I'm going offline, man,
yeah,
whatever.
I'm just gonna
you're not doing anything here.
Yeah.
And when that happens, suddenly, it's not that something is there that wasn't there before, but your filters are down. So now that you can perceive a much broader space, right? And in that space, even in ancient history, there was this sense of what you're saying. Like, there is this knowledge that's happened all the way along. Now we kind of frame it in technological kind of terms, but it's really the same thing. And I also think about this analogy of when you drop a pebble versus a rock into a pond. You drop a pebble, it makes a small concentric circle, right? You drop a boulder in and it makes large concentric circles that go in all directions. So if you think about space-time being kind of a derivative of some deeper process, but we experience it in space-time, then when something really massive happens, like a singularity event, it spreads those concentric circles in all directions. And we experience it as the future. We experience it as this echo of the future. What if something's happening? Something's about to happen. And again, what's really interesting is in psi experiments and whatnot, Dean Radin and people with really rigorous protocols have shown retrocausality is a thing. Precognition is a thing.
Right.
Time does not work the way we're conventionally taught about it. We know this. So the fact that I think so many of us are tuning into the sense of something is about to happen, that's pointing to something real fundamentally.
Yeah. Are we being pushed by causality or pulled by inevitability of something that's already taken place, and we're simply, you know, again, he's just my favorite because of the poetic nature in which he articulated these ideas, Terence McKenna, you know, he really did have an incredible way of looking at these types of concepts and just describing it in a way that just felt absolutely poetically charged and enlightened. But he would say something along the lines of, you know, we're kind of being channeled across high walls. Like, there's maneuverability, there's decision making, there's freedom of will. You know, you can move around, but we're moving down these channeled high walls. We are going towards something that can't really be escaped from. You can move around however you want to do that during that process, but there is an end destination in place. And this is, again, the, you know, the end times, the epoch, the singularity, the transcendental object. I don't know what it really represents, but I don't get the sense that we are at the end of the human story. I do get a real feeling that right now, and the direction we're moving in, has to be seen as transformation. And I have to look at my own life as evidence of that, because of the transformative moments that have happened through the darkest of times. You know, it's right. always those times where you just think everything's gone to shit and there's nothing right. that's going to fix it. And suddenly it does get fixed. It does get solved. You grow a bit stronger. You grow a bit wiser. And it's these necessary check marks and obstacles in the road on your own journey that I think translate collectively. And I think that's where we're at right now. We're at an extreme, we're like in the dark night of the soul on a planetary level. And what comes from that, at least from my experience, if you're, you know, able to push through, is transformation for the better, right. you know?
Yeah, another way to think about that is trauma, right? So one of the really interesting Absolutely. Things about trauma, and it even comes into the UFO phenomenon, is that when people go through an abduction experience and they experience ontological shock, that's a kind of trauma. Now, what's interesting is you can look at it from one kind of one-dimensional frame and say, that's just negative, that's bad, nothing good about it. But on the other hand, so many of the people that have had that experience come back with a transformed worldview where they basically yeah. see themselves, reality, their fellow human, everybody differently, changes the fundamental nature of the way they live their lives. And so there is this ironic sense that on the one hand, in modern society, we think we're about making our lives more comfortable. I'm not saying this that's all bad, but ironically, it's through these really transformational moments that involve trauma, both individually and collectively, that we actually vault into a completely new worldview, not just a more mature version of the one we're in, but it necessitates transcension to a higher level of reorienting the entire picture. And so I agree with you that it seems that ironically, this thing we're fearing, we're also somewhat creating, right? Because the collective tension we're feeling about things are not going to work out the way they are right now. Like, we have to experience some sort of massive shift. Otherwise, our technological process and progress will be our demise. So it's demanding some sort of rise in consciousness. And so that may be part of this singularity, whatever you end up calling it, right? But absolutely, there's something about this transformational moment that's tied to trauma, and then the sense of something must change, and that becomes the very impetus for the change.
Yeah, yeah. Again, I can speak to that individually. You know, trauma being one of the underlying things that pushed me into this weird field of research in the first place. You know,
right.
Like I said, my dad recommending some books to me. That was kind of the first thing when I was in a depression, in a slump, you know, my dad recommending some books, and that opened up my mind to some different ideas. And then boom, here I am, you know? So I think that there's certainly, you know, we should pay attention to that, that there is this kind of strange correlation between traumatic experiences and an opening of the perceptual bandwidth, it would seem. Not for everyone, but there's a certain case to be made for a connection there with the UFO subject, because I've seen it as well. And again, like you said, with abduction cases, there's a fair few people that would say, I mean, it was scary, but I understand it now. I've integrated yeah. it into my life. You know, I recognize the importance of it now, you know, but at the time it's terrifying. And I think that's where we're at right now with the world. Is it is terrifying and it is scary, man. You know, I mean, I'm sitting here as a 28-year-old guy and I'm thinking, do I want kids? Do I want, do you know, where is this all going? You know, I, you know, where is this all going? And it's, It's tough, but I do think that there is this jumping off platform that we seem to be edging closer towards. And what happens after that, I don't know, but I don't think it's negative. I think it is transformative, and it's going to be bold. And it's kind of really weird to think that we might actually all be alive to witness it as well, because the precipice seems like it's very close.
Absolutely. And one other piece I would add is that, like you say, not everyone has this reactivity or response to trauma, right? So even in defining those terms there, reactive versus responsive, right? Responsive is you proactively choose to make a decision based on the sense of I've got to somehow orient to some larger scale, some larger perspective. But reactive is regressive, right? So sometimes what happens is when people experience trauma, they actually regress.
Yeah.
They begin to question, will I have enough? We get back to scarcity, right? And when scarcity becomes a bigger concern, people sometimes regress in their consciousness and their worldview. So the key, as we face these challenges as a collective civilization, will we be the kind of civilization that says, we're going to unite and use this collective trauma to vault ourselves into a new orienting principle that opens up new possibilities? Or will we be consumed by fear so much that we regress? Let's hope it's the former. I think that, again, because source consciousness is exploring all the possibilities across what extends into space and time as we perceive it, both of those things have happened, will happen. And as you say, I think there's a very good chance we're going to be alive to see it happen.
Before we wind down, let me just get your perspective on something that's not as deep as this. And, you know, for a good reason, it can't really go that deep. But I would like to know what you feel about the kind of surface world conversation around UAP and the government addressing it in the United States, and where that is going, in your opinion. Where do you feel like that type of narrative is going, especially because you and I like to jump into these extremely corkscrewing, winding rabbit holes of speculation and philosophy? I mean, we know that there is a deep trench here, and you know, this is certainly a surface layer of information being presented. It's good. It's starting a conversation. It's allowing the scientific community to open up a bit. But where do you see it going? And like, how much stock do you put in this being the kind of impetus that puts the world into a new perspective on these things?
It's a good question for the very reason you pointed to there, because this is such a deep trench.
Right.
My question is, how do you open it without, precipitating the descent into the depths of it? And how many people, again, this is not to toot our own horns, but how many people are prepared to have these level of conversations, and not just sort of when they want to in their spare time, but be forced into it because of revelations that begin to call into question our very understanding of ourselves, our origins, the nature of reality, all those things. So for me, that's the biggest question I hold open, is how do you let some of it out without precipitating this Pandora's box of questions, right? That's my question. And of course, on the government side, I think that many of these deep sort of black forces, in terms of these black projects and whatnot, have played with fire, right? They've had some success, again, measuring on a really narrow technological scale, right? There's been some reverse engineering that's been successful. I think there's even been some understanding about mind control and consciousness manipulation because of some of these experiments. But they don't really understand the fullness of this to any extent. And because many of them are actually operating on a lower level of developmental consciousness, they don't yet have the even perceptual bandwidth to really consider some of the questions we are. And so it ends up being translated into a very kind of truncated way of thinking about these things that might not be that helpful for humanity. So in the same way that we talked about bioweapons and nuclear weapons being a way that we could destroy ourselves many times over, in the same way, some of the technology that's come online with zero point and anti-gravity and things that on the one hand could transform our civilization for the positive could also be just yet another way we could destroy ourselves catastrophically, perhaps even to a whole new scale beyond nuclear in terms of collapsing space-time or something like that. So these are the questions, right? Which what's interesting to me is it comes back to ultimately being consciousness questions, right? Again, will we take these revelations about this broader reality and these other beings to again reduce it to scarcity concerns? If we do that, we're going to keep going down this blind alley. It'll be no good. So where it goes, I don't know. I honestly don't know. There is this sense, certainly, that there seems to be certainly forces pushing for an opening right now. And so the question that comes to me is along the lines of what we talked about of this sense of something coming. Do they know that? And do they know that not out of their own volition do they want to talk about this, but they have no choice because what is coming is so significant that they better get ahead of the curve. That if they want to control the narrative at all, they have to get ahead of it. And that again speaks to the possibility that we're at the precipice of some major event.
Well, I mean, there's a fair few prophetic messages that have been sent out into the UFO sphere over the years, and I think a lot of people have 2027, 2026 lodged in their mind from different claims from people that have said, "Oh no, this is when things are going to happen. It's this event, there's something happening around this time period." And like, I don't know. I mean, maybe it will. I mean, I'll remain open-minded. I won't throw it completely away. Certainly does feel like something could culminate within this time period. And I must admit that even before having a hardcore interest in like the UFO subject, just kind of coming into 2020, I had this weird gut feeling that 2020 to 2030, this decade was just really important, that things were going to happen, that it was going to be this very strange decade. And it certainly feels like it's gearing up to be a very strange decade. So, I get that. I understand that there's this kind of necessary transformative process that people are sensing and feeling. And how you deal with that as a government and the kind of bits of knowledge you might have, or how you deal with it as a private entity, because who really knows who has all of the knowledge on this? It's an extremely difficult target to place on who actually has the knowledge. Is it Lockheed Skunk Works? Is it, the Smithsonian, is it the Vatican? Is it, the NSA? It's very difficult to know who has the highest fidelity information on this. But I think it kind of goes back to, again, like you were saying, scarcity. You've got the national security kind of aperture that they're viewing this through. The majority of people, I imagine, who are handling this kind of portfolio are looking at it through that national security perspective. And it does come back to scarcity. We can't let X have this. We can't let Y have that. We have to protect this. We have to protect that. We have to think of our own resources. And, maybe these are just the hallmarks of a relatively immature species that's going through the throes of growing and maturing. And I'd like to think that, we've got time to actually get our act together. But it's speeding up. There's no doubt about it. It feels like it's speeding up. And kind of feel like lucky and terrified at the same time to be in this particular time of the human story.
I think the way that I think about it, again, I like to talk about toggling between relative and absolute, right? And I think you have to spend a fair amount of time choosing the absolute perspective right now in this period of time, because we recognize we are in really significant times where something catastrophic, cataclysmic seems like it's on the menu kind of thing. And we can choose, again, will we be reactive to that or responsive? The responsive way to respond to it is to say, how can this help us transcend our current view? Like you say, rather than saying, wow, these are some really cool potential weapons, we could use this to dominate our adversaries. When we hear about the US military going from being concerned about winning wars to suddenly realizing some of this technology is so next gen that we could actually just pursue full spectrum dominance over the entire planet. Again, that speaks to the level of consciousness, right? So when these things come online, these possibilities, these revelations, will we choose to transcend our current perspective, or we use it to regress and just perpetuate more of the same? That's the real question. And I think the way to stay sane through it all is to have the absolute perspective along with the relative. Remember that you are in the video game to some degree, regardless of how you define, right? Simulation or spiritual iteration. Either way, by doing that, I think it lets you choose to be the best version you can be within that iteration or simulation and hope to be part of the solution. And regardless of what happens, right, in the big picture, ultimately, whatever we end up manifesting in next, at least we know we chose the higher cause, the higher call. And by doing that, we can at least rest better, I think.
Will we digress or will we progress? Drop a comment below. Let us know what you personally think about all of that. Darren King, it's been a pleasure, man. It's been a really interesting conversation.
Jay, I have enjoyed it just as much as you, and I knew it would be interesting and be happy to do it again sometime.